Welcome to the Dork Forest. Jackie and her pals will never bore us. Shameless confessions
about our obsessions
will make us laugh and smile. So let's explore the Dork Forest and dork out for a while.
Hi, it's Jackie Cation, and you are listening to the Dork Forest. The website's jackiecation.com, dorkforest.com, thedorkforest.com if you like a determiner. Let's do the credits. Patrick Brady's going to fix this audio and video. Vilmos works on JackieCation.com. And Mike Rickberg sang the song with his wife, Sarah. He composed it, and he will sing his version of the Mexican hat dance at the end of this show. Thank you so much for listening to the Dork Forest. Here's a scoop. I'm doing stand-up online. A lot of Zoom shows will eventually go back on the road. Sign up for my email list. It's easy to get off. It's harder to get on than it is to get off. And no harm, no foul, if ever bored. JackieCation.com. Sign up for the email list. You'll find out about my weekly Zoom shows and stand up on the road eventually. You may donate to the show if you would like. I would like. Sure, I would. There's PayPal, Jackie@JackieCation.com, and there is a PayPal button on both DorkForest.com and JackieCation.com, and there's Venmo if you like Venmo, Jackie-Cation, oddly enough. If you have listened to all of the shows, go to dorkforest.bandcamp.com, I think. The Dork Forest has a Bandcamp page. You can listen to a lot of ones that are free from pre-2009 when I started pre-recording. And then there's live episodes that cost me a couple of bucks, so I charge you a couple of bucks. There's also some stand-up. There's a story album that's very exciting there. And other than that, I have a lot of merch in my garage. Feel free to order if you know anybody who doesn't have any CDs or the DVD. And you can follow me everywhere at Jackie Cation. Let's get into the show. Hi, I'm Jackie Cation. We are in my garage. Well, I'm in my garage. Brian is in Brooklyn. Hello, Brian Parisi.
Hi.
Parisi?
Parisi.
Parisi. Yeah. We just talked about it. I don't understand, Jackie. Brian Parisi, you are a stand-up comic. You are a New York comic. And you have an album out on 800-Pound Gorilla called Last Wishes. And I'm going to record my next one with them. And that is neat that it just came out and everyone should go listen to it. Last Wishes, right?
Yeah, thank you. That's sure. Nice. I didn't know you were about to record with them. That's cool.
Yeah. Yeah, it'll be my fifth album. I was supposed to record twice in 2020. Didn't happen.
Yeah.
Aired already, huh?
Yeah.
When did you record this?
Oh,
Last
man.
Wishes.
Yeah, I got mine in like right under the gun, like first week of March.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
That is final.
Yeah.
Nice work.
Yes. It was like, and by under the gun, I mean like there was probably COVID in the room, but we didn't know yet. You know?
You didn't know. And the aerosols had yet to be labeled. And what? Where'd you record it?
I recorded it at, it's the basement of this bar called The Big Hunt. It's in Washington, D.C.
Oh, nice.
D.C. Underground Comedy. And I'm not sure if that venue survived.
So many problems. But we will all rebuild, for that is the nature of the history of the world. But the Dork Forest, now that is something. So by the way, Brian Parisi is at Parisi Comedy, P-R-A-I-S-E, comedy, spelled comedy. So, and the name of the album is Last Wishes, and it's on 800-Pound Gorilla, and you should totally give it a jingle jangle and a listen. And now I'm ready to dork out. And I love that you were just like, just the one thing. And I'm like, really? Let's do it. Pasta?
Yeah. Pasta. That's
pasta.
The thing.
That's
yeah.
it. Are you Italian, Mr. Parisi?
Yes, I am.
Okay, that does help. That will, it's either that or Chinese. That's what I'm looking for is with your noodle talk.
Yeah.
Hello and welcome to Noodle Talk, by the way.
Yeah, I think if I remember right, that we stole it from them, if I remember right. I think
it might have been. I think it started out there. But there, you'll be happy to know that the Chinese are eating a lot of potatoes now.
Oh, good.
So they took those from, and we all did, from Peru.
Oh.
So that's where potatoes started. And apples, something like Uzbekistan or Kazakhstan or something like that.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it turns out the planet is round. And if you keep walking, you're going to bring somebody lunch.
Yeah, it's all connected. I like that.
Yeah. It's do you think that you ate pasta because of the Italian thing or?
Oh yeah. I mean, my dad is from Italy. So he like came here when he was a kid. So my dad's side of the family, big Italian, there was always.
OG. Yeah.
Yeah. So there was always like a lot of, you know, that's where I was first introduced to like Italian cooking was
right. My
grandmother. And then, you know, my grandmother kind of taught my mom how to do it. And there was always Italian food. It was like every holiday is like a whole parade of,
What is your mom Italian?
No, she's not. But it's weird.
Point of contention with my dad and my mother, because my dad's Armenian and my mother was Irish, or her parents were Irish and my father's parents were Armenian. And my grandmother was like, you know, she's not Armenian. And I was like, yeah, I'm her child. I'm right here. What are you? You're out of your goddamn mind.
Like you were going to kind of conspire with her and be like, yeah, I know, right? What's the deal?
How did that happen? And but that is so funny. But that was nice of your grandmother to teach your mom. So did she make homemade? Did they make homemade pasta, your family?
Yeah. I mean, most of the dishes that they made though, it's interesting. Like people, like a lot of authentic Italian stuff that people make, people use dry pasta. I think the idea that people have that like Italians always make fresh pasta. It's like,
yeah,
not always.
Not always.
No, yeah. It's a lot of times I think dry pasta, but yeah. So there were some dishes that were like fresh making pasta, but that's something that I got into more recently. Like I was never involved in that when I was growing up. That's something honestly in the last like 2 or 3 years I got into the fresh pasta thing.
Oh, that's cool. And has it flourished in quarantine?
Oh yeah. Yeah. I have nothing. I mean, there was, especially in the early quarantine, I would just every Sunday I was, it's sort of a long story, but I ended up living in a house.
We have time, my friend. Yes, you cannot.
I don't mean to detract from the pasta, but I ended up living in a house with my brother and his family. And just got out of New York when things were going on. So I was like living in a house with him and his kids. And I was just like every Sunday I would just make a big pasta meal and I bought in quarantine during my, you know, I think everyone's had that phase where they're like, I'm going to buy stuff that's stupid. And
yeah.
I bought a whole bunch of like, you know, like a pasta roller and like different little items to do.
One of these things?
Yeah.
Hand crank pasta
the hand
maker?
Crank. Yeah.
We had one of those. We gave it away.
Really?
Yeah, because we were making it once. And then we were like, the house isn't that big.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. It's definitely something that I was like, I think I'll use, like, because I know I'm into pasta, but like, as I was doing it, I definitely had a moment where I was like, is this going to be a thing that I never use? But it ended up being, it's a little easier than I thought it was going to be. And I found that I can do it mindlessly. You can mindlessly make pasta, which is nice. If you're cooking,
yeah,
and you have like heat sources and things happening, you kind of need to pay sort of close attention. Once you've start the pasta process, as far as making the actual dough and rolling the noodles, it's sort of like, you know, you can take your time. There's no, so I'll put my headphones in and I'll listen to an audiobook and while I do it. And it doesn't feel like, somewhat stressful, which cooking can kind of feel like.
Okay. So the pasta you're making doesn't have to be, there's no time. Like, aren't you afraid it's going to dry out or anything or?
No, I mean, if you keep it in a thing, so I usually keep it in something with a wet towel over the top.
Okay.
And you're just breaking a piece off and then
rolling it and then feeding it through the thing. And
yeah, so you really don't, like, as long as you do the moisture right. And honestly, even if it dries out a little, which I've had sort of that skin form on the outside, you can really kind of muscle through that and get it out. It's
like, still fresh pasta. It's
yeah.
still probably better than dried pasta. I haven't had a lot of, I've had some fresh, like there was a time when I went, I would ask at every Italian restaurant or every French restaurant, do you make your own pasta? Like a jackass. And
I like that.
Almost to a person, they said no.
Yeah, it's actually more unusual than I thought. I assume the same thing as you. Like when I would be like, oh, if it's an Italian place, you know, I pictured them in the back doing the thing.
Making pasta.
Yeah.
Yeah. It turns out they also purchase pasta, and mm-hmm. Which is made in a factory in giant sheets, I guess, right? There was a place, and I will digress, of course, just to tell you this story. I went with Pete Lee. I read about it in the New Yorker or something like that. He's a Minneapolis comic as well. We're both Minneapolis. And he's like the generation under me, I think, two maybe. And I read about a place on Staten Island right off the ferry that rotates actual grandmothers. And it's literally like she gets to pick what you're eating. She wow. makes the thing that she likes to make, that she's good at, that she's proud of. And that's what they serve that Sunday. Sunday.
Is it like a pasta factory? Like they're just, I'm picturing like rotating nonnas through there. Like, and there's like a night, is there like a night shift nonna? Like what, how does that work?
It was literally, it just looked like a small cafe. It seated, it maybe had 8 tables, 10.
Wow.
And they were mostly two tops. And so we walked in, they looked at us and we're like, we're here for whatever you're serving. And we sat down and we ate it. It was delicious. And we got to see the grandmother in the background.
Nice.
And but we did not get to meet her. She had no interest in meeting crazy Goyim, Odar, non-Italian tourists from Wisconsin. So,
do you remember what it was that you
what
made?
The meal was?
Yeah.
I don't.
Okay.
Which is too bad, because
But it was worth the trip, though.
It was worth the trip, and it was at yeah.
I've actually never been to Staten Island, and I feel like this might be like. The one, I mean, I've driven through there, but I've never, you know, been like, I need to go
here.
Have
you taken the ferry?
I think I've been on the ferry, yeah. But I'd never been to like a destination. I think I had like one thing for work there once, but I've never like been like, I'm going to Staten Island to do a thing. And this might be the thing. If there's a like a nonna cafe.
If it's still happening.
Yeah,
but just,
it's
yeah,
still there.
Yeah, Google that, because I have to say that that. First of all, I try to ride the Staten Island Ferry every time I go to New York because it's the cheapest view of the Statue of Liberty in the whole wide world.
Yeah.
And I have no interest in climbing the Statue of Liberty, so
no.
I don't need to go to the island, the
no,
Liberty
there's no,
Island.
There's
Who
no
cares?
Reason to go to the island unless you're in the seventh grade.
When right, you, seventh grade
yes.
or
seventh
I get
grade,
to meet Spider-Man. I'll go if I get to meet Spider-Man.
Those are good conditions. Those make sense.
Feels valid. And then my stepmother was actually Italian and she was actually pretty good at chicken cacciatore.
Oh, yeah.
But that was the only. When you make pasta, are you only making spaghetti or are you making sort of the shells and stuff? Can you do that with a thing?
You can do lots of. It's surprising the amount of things you can do. There are some that are like, it's like, why? They're sort of like, why would you do this? Like, I don't know many people that are like making like ziti.
Right,
you know,
like making their own corkscrews or bow ties.
Some of those ones are like, it's weird because there are ones that I thought, oh, well, that seems very complicated. But then you just twist it. Like there are some that I thought would be harder that are easier. And it's like you don't know until you see a YouTube video of a guy being like, it's like this. And then you're like, oh, OK, I see what you're doing. But yeah, some of them I don't. Some of them I don't do a lot. Honestly, I mostly do. I love it for lasagna noodles because you can get them really thin. Lasagna noodles that are dry, store-bought, are so thick that you sort of have to cook them before you put them in. Whereas when I make fresh lasagna noodles, I don't even boil them. I just layer the lasagna with the fresh noodle and then it cooks when it bakes. And they do have like ready-made ones, but I don't think they're
amazing.
As good. So yeah.
Yeah.
That's a big one. And then like fettuccine is great. Fresh pasta, tagliatelle.
What's the difference between fettuccine and spaghetti? The width?
Fettuccine is thicker. Yeah. And spaghetti is like round sort of too.
Round.
instead of flat.
Yeah, I suppose.
Yeah.
But you're putting it through a flat. Okay.
What? I don't know how to do spaghetti in a thing. I really don't.
Okay.
I think there's those KitchenAid like attachments that can like shit the pasta out.
Yeah.
But I don't know how you would do it with a roller. I'm not sure.
Well, first of all, you've blown my mind with the idea. Of course, you make a sheet, you put it through the big roller, and now you have a flat piece of pasta, right? Or a flat, it's really just dough, right? Or is it bread? Is it bread dough? What is it?
Different? No, it's not bread. Yeah, it's dough. I think it's pasta dough. Yeah.
Pasta dough is different than bread dough. I did an episode about bread with Tom Papa.
Oh,
I've retained very little of it.
Yeah.
So talk to me, what's in the dough of a pasta?
It's very basic. So that it doesn't even have, I think the main difference is that bread has yeast and there's none of that with pasta. So you're basically, you don't even get, and you don't do much of like the rising. Like, so you make the dough and the dough is basically just, there's two different ways to do it. You could do it with just flour and water.
Okay.
Or you can do it with flour and eggs. I usually do flour and eggs. You make like a little mound, you put a little hole in the middle and you do it with a fork, you spin it around with a fork, and then you just kind of work the flour in until you get the right consistency of dough. So it's very simple. Other people will put other things in it. Some people put olive oil in it, a little olive oil or a little salt.
You don't add salt?
No. I like to control the salt with the way the salt gets in the pasta for me is with the water. So I taste the water before I boil the pasta. And then I know, you know how salty the water is. And that's how the salt gets into the pasta. Plus in the sauce, there's going to be salt too. But
oh, interesting. I'm a big fan of not cooking with too much salt too. Because well, you can always add more salt. You can't take it out.
Okay. See, you're like my mother. Not in any other way besides this, but
I'm exactly like your mother. A lot of people don't know this about me, you guys. Me and Brian Parisi's mom. Clones. Anyway, go.
yes, technically you could at the end, but the thing is like the pasta is not going to absorb it in the same way. So at a certain point, you know, the point at which pasta gets done absorbing liquid is that's when the flavor of the pasta is kind of set. You can put the salt on top, but then you're going to get like big pops of salty spots you missed are going to be not the same, like it's not like evenly sort of distributed through the pasta. So to me, like the time to get the salting right is with the water. If you get the right level in the water and you know how salty your sauce is, you can kind of do that. And then also you have to factor in cheese too. Because a lot of Italian pasta dishes have cheese. And if you're using like a Pecorino Romano, that's very salty. Parmesan's salty too, but it's like you're going to, so you really are, you're kind of doing this like salt math in your head as you're going through. You're like, all right, you know.
I would think for sure, just because, which is why I thought people added the salt in the dry ingredients is to make sure that it was well mixed.
Yeah, there are people who do that. There are people who do that. And I think they also salt their pasta water. I don't know that there's anybody who just purely, I've never heard a real Italian person ever advocate for not salting the pasta water. And it is one of those things that's like, when you hear about like I think among Italians, it's like, ugh, people who don't. Yeah.
Right. The judgmentalness, it's everywhere. It's everywhere among every cultural group. It's what causes wars. But other than that, the food is amazing.
Yeah.
So, but here's my, okay. So if you use eggs with your flour, you don't use water. The only liquid is the eggs.
Yeah. Yes.
Interesting. Yeah. And then, so then you roll it out because you have the rolling kind of pasta maker, not a KitchenAid that'll create, you know, bullets of pasta.
Yeah.
So then you have a sheet of pasta and then you cut that into either strips or lasagna squares.
Yeah. Yes. So sort of. So like first thing is that like, you're not doing it all at once. So I'm not taking the, you know, you cut up a little piece. You want to get a piece that'll make a sheet that's the right kind of size, dimensions, right? Otherwise, you're going to get like, you know, you could end up with really long noodles. You could always cut it in half, but you're sort of aiming for a certain dimension based on the size of your roller. So you want to know how much that little chunk that you're going to cut off is, and then you make it into a sheet. And then you can either take that, depending on the pasta, you're taking that sheet and you are like putting it through, there's an attachment on the roller where it can, you know, like split it into noodles, or or sometimes, like, depending on the noodle, I'll just do it by hand. So like when I made I forget what they're called, the ones that have like little I do it with a little roller that has like little ridges. It's sort of like the edge of a lasagna noodle, how it's got that like little ridge thing.
Oh, right, right. Kind of serrated looking.
Yeah, I made noodles like that. I can't remember what they're called at this point, but
is that
like
an
ribbons.
Attachment onto the device? Or?
No, I just have a little like, it's like a mini pizza roller.
Okay.
That I'll use. But that's, you know, I mean, you can do it lots of different ways. The other way is some people will, if you're making noodles, they'll roll it up the sheet and then slice the edge of it so it makes a noodle.
Oh, it's in a spiral. Right. And what I like is the idea. I don't know why I took this out of the mic stand, but here we go. Putting it back. So if you've created a noodle out of your sheet of pasta as it comes through, and then what blew my mind was that you're like, oh, you could just take that noodle and kind of roll it and then make a ziti or a spiral cut, a twisty noodle?
See, the twisty ones are a little like, they're, it's sort of like there's a different technique with every type of pasta, which is kind of wild. So like gnocchi, for instance, is a whole different thing because there's potatoes involved. But the way you're rolling them one at a time with your thumb to make that shape, sometimes you'll use a little tool that you roll something on with like cavatappi and cavatelli. You're like twisting. There's all sorts of different techniques, and I don't know them all, but I know every time I watch a video, there's not like one answer. There's like, oh man, this is, and then sometimes there's different schools of thought, and I'm like, I hate you guys.
Right. And because, yeah, I mean, you think about it, it's sort of like the bags of tortilla chips, and that some of them are scoops and some of them are straight and some of them are triangles. And you're like, so that's the shape of the pasta so that it can accentuate.
Mwah!
Yeah. It can make the food be better or
yes.
something.
Yes.
There's true?
Yeah, I think it's definitely true. There's certain types of pasta that, you know, you, depending on what you're making, it, like certain noodles wouldn't be as good as others. I do think that some of it's a little like over, you know, it's like, it still would be good if you put, you know, it's sauce and pasta. I'm sure it would taste good, but it's, there are things of like, you know, certain ones hold the sauce better depending on how thick the sauce is and what's in it. And then there are, yeah. So there's some of that is like strategic of like what kind of pasta you want to use with which sauce.
And what are you looking at? The consistency of the noodle, or are you like the thickness of the noodle, or,
yeah,
or how it is shaped?
Yeah. I would say all of those things. There's also some element of like, you know, shapes. Like if you have like stuff, like a classic one that I like to make is called pasta ceci, which is like pasta with chickpeas. And you use shells with that because it's kind of like the little bits of chickpea and stuff will get sort of inside the shell.
Yeah.
So it's like,
yeah,
a,
well,
yeah.
It sounds amazing. I love chickpeas. What are you doing to the, what are you doing for the sauce? Like,
actually a real simple one that I recommend when people are like, hey, Brian, like, I want to start making pasta. What should I, where should I start? Kind of like, if they don't know how to cook, I'm like, this one you could do.
Because
it's real easy, but it's just basically you're cooking onion and garlic and butter and olive oil to start, and then you're putting like chickpeas with the liquid from the
can of chickpeas, not dry.
Cans.
Okay,
nope. And you let the liquid go in as well, and then you're just sort of boiling them, simmering them until they're soft. You add basil and spices in there, and then once they're soft, you kind of half mush it, so you leave some of them whole, but you're mushing up a bunch of them. And then it becomes the consistency of a sauce. You put a little bit of tomato sauce in for color, and that's it.
Talk to me about the spices. You mentioned basil. What are we looking at? Salt and pepper.
Basil, salt, pepper are the main ones you can do. If you want a little kick, I like to put a little red pepper flakes in with the
red
onions and
garlic. Red pepper flakes, that'll do it.
Yeah.
You've already sauteed the onions and garlic.
Yeah.
You've added the can of chickpeas.
Yes.
And then you add your herbs, a little basil, salt, pepper, and maybe some red pepper flakes.
Yeah.
You boil it off a little bit. And then you half mash it and add a little tomato sauce?
At the very end, you're half mashing it, adding tomato sauce, And then the very last step that I do is I take some roasted red peppers and I cut them into little strips and I sprinkle them in there. That's something that I actually got from, I just really like roasted red pepper hummus.
Oh, okay.
And I was ooh, chickpeas are good with that. So I added that in there. Yeah.
Are you vegetarian?
No.
Or do you just like vegetables and beans?
Yeah. I mean, that's just one thing I make, but yeah, I know I make a lot of like, meat ones too. I make a lamb ragu a lot.
How are you doing that? I love lamb. We have lamb every couple of weeks.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Lamb is great. So that one's a little, I'll give you sort of a shortened version because I don't want to give you, unless you want, I don't feel like a step-by-step recipe.
No. It's almost impossible to bore me with minutiae on the Dork Forest. This is the safest space you've ever been in. Brian Parisi, by the way, you should find his album. Uh-huh. That's right. That's what we're doing, Rangers. We're cutting to tell you who I'm talking to. Brian Parisi. Last Wishes is the name of his album, and it is everywhere where you listen to comedy albums. You know it. And it's Parisi Comedy, Parise Comedy, Comedy.
Thank you.
Yeah. So lamb ragu. Let's hear them.
Lamb ragu is about, you're going to start with like olive oil and you're going to do garlic and onions to start, you know, most sauces start like that. Then you're also doing, anchovies. You take anchovies. You mash them up so they're like, you know, like you don't want whole anchovies, but you mash them into a paste. You're also doing like rosemary, thyme, and then cooking the lamb in there.
Okay.
And then you're browning the ground. I use ground lamb. I've also used like lamb shanks, but that's
stew meat, right?
I've also used bone. I mean, I've used different things. I actually think that ground lamb is cheap and honestly like comes out pretty good.
That'll make a nice ragu, a ground. Yeah, that's neat.
Yeah. So I'll brown that and then I'll deglaze the pan with some wine before I add the tomato paste.
A white wine or tomatoes. A red wine? I don't know.
I actually typically use a rosé. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter.
Just a little bit of whatever you have for cooking wine.
Usually it's whatever I have, but I am a very basic bitch and I always have rosé on hand.
Fair enough.
So I'll do that. And then, you know, it's some crushed tomatoes, not a lot, like a can. And then you just want to like brown it. I think I've left out ingredients though. I think there's some, I also use some, maybe some carrots. Yeah. I think there's also some chopped up carrots in there, but that's the general thing. And then you want to cook it. You want to kind of like brown it along the bottom of the pan. It's one of those sauces where like, if you cook it longer, it helps.
Like low and slow kind of thing, like a low simmer.
Yeah, I mean,
after
it's
you
like,
brown it.
And, yeah, it's not like necessary the way it is for bolognese, but it's like I like to do it for at least, you know, an hour and a half or so, and then you know you do pappardelle is great with that. You can add a little bit of pot. You know, you want to keep a little bit of pasta water splashed in there when you start to mix the pasta with it, so it sticks on there. Pasta water is like glue for pasta.
Is it?
Yeah, it's like how you get it. That's some people make the mistake of they drain their pasta like they're trying to like dry it off, like they're gonna put it in a fucking drawer. Like you just drain it most of the water and then splash it back in the pan.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So
I don't know why I'm getting angry at hypothetical people who are doing this wrong.
Well, it's that I say you. This is the hill you die on. The pasta water hill is the way to go. Am I saving like a half a cup of pasta water? Am I saving?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I would say if you save. I mean, it depends on what you're doing. There are recipes like if you make a cacio e pepe, that's a whole other thing. But
how
like,
are you spelling that?
C A C I O, and then A, which is and in Italian, and pepe, P E P E.
What does it mean?
It's basically cheese and pepper. And that's all it is. It's like pecorino and black pepper on a pasta. But the thing that makes it a sauce is really pasta water. You can use pasta water and I use pasta water and mascarpone cheese. Some people use butter too, but it's just to like, it's sort of like if you think about when you make mac and cheese.
Yeah.
You know how you have to make it a little wet before you put that powder shit in there?
Yeah. It's been a long time since I've decided to just go with an Annie's or a Kraft.
Oh, wow.
I make a homemade mac and cheese. I don't make the pasta.
Oh, my God.
But my mac and cheese is actually, I got it from a friend of mine, and it is the best mac and cheese I've ever had in my life. And the trick, of course, is too much cheese and so much butter, and then whole milk. It's whole milk, butter, and there's a sharp white.
Okay.
And a Gruyere.
Mm.
And, and then a Parmesan.
Nice.
For accent. And nice. Then there's also, on top of the pasta, you take like 2 tablespoons of butter and you brown some bread.
Breadcrumbs. Yeah.
Yeah. And you put croutons on top and you're like, wait, is there not enough carbs? Yeah. Okay. All right. So I'll make this like once every year and a half. And, you know, essentially Andy, my husband, will be like, okay, when are we having that again? I'm jonesing on that. So, but it is amazing. It's delicious. And
that sounds great.
It's available. I have shared the recipe. Everyone, I can do it again. Anyway, because I know that people, there's no reason not to want the recipe, but everyone should definitely have it.
Yeah, that sounds really good. I've actually never really, that's one area I haven't gone down, is I haven't really made much homemade mac and cheese. I should give that a shot.
Well, because you'd have to make hollow noodles, wouldn't you? Can you make hollow noodles?
I wouldn't even attempt to make macaronis. No, that's...
Oh, okay.
Yeah. There's certain things where, like, if it's too small and delicate, I'm just like, nah, I'm just going to get a box of that. It'll take me a minute at the store. How much better could I be at that than this? Like,
right.
Yeah. But there are things, though, that I think are trash when you buy them. Like,
and what are,
gnocchi is never good. Maybe I could be proved wrong. I challenge them, but it's expensive. Gummy,
yeah.
Like those gummy things that they have in the thing. It's like, those never are good when you make them.
What are they supposed to taste like? What's gnocchi supposed to,
I don't
eat a lot of gnocchi. Okay.
And pillowy.
Oh.
Yeah. It's supposed to be somewhat, if it's real dense, you've gone awry. It needs to be sort of soft, and it should be sort of light. And it's like a mouthfeel thing too. Like when you eat a gnocchi that's right, you're like, oh wow. And when you eat one that's wrong, you're like, why is this sticking to every part of my mouth? It's like the wrong texture. Like, but I've had some of the best ones I had when I was in Italy, was like gnocchi that I was like, oh my God, it's just unreal when you get it right. And my grandmother used to make it too, but it is hard to do, but it's not, it's sort of one that's not worth buying the dried kind. Cause it's just never going to be right.
Okay. So just what is in gnocchi? You said that there was potatoes involved.
Yeah.
But I don't know.
That's the main difference. It's really a lot like, you're just basically doing everything I said with pasta. With the exception of before that, you are boiling and milling potatoes into like...
Oh, it's a potato dumpling? There's no flour? It's just all...
No, there's flour too. So it's the same as pasta. It's the same basic ingredients with the exception of you are doing flour, water, and potato instead of just flour and water.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
And it's sort of you're not using, I know you're not, but I can't think of what it would look like, but you're not using like powdered potatoes, like potato mix.
No. Yeah. You boil potatoes and then you mill it. So you put it through like a food mill. Like,
okay.
Mills. Yeah.
To make it tiny.
Yes.
To sort of not shredded, but pilly, sort of tiny.
So it'll work into a dough easily.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. And it is fully cooked potato.
Yes. Yeah.
Like soft, but not crazy. You're not mashing it. Okay. It's the imagery is blowing my mind. So
it's disturbing you a little bit.
Yeah. I'm just trying to picture it. And then what do you put on gnocchi, or do you just eat them as is?
You put a sauce on them. You can really do anything, but yeah, you would do, tomato sauce is classic, but you can also do, I think it's great with pesto sauce. Some of the best gnocchi I've had has been with pesto sauce. You can also do like a gorgonzola cream sauce.
Mm-hmm,
it's pretty popular. I mean, really any sauce. And one thing you probably wouldn't do with gnocchi is you wouldn't do like a sauce that has a lot of other like a lot of meat elements or like big chunks of things. You don't really see that
because it should be the thing.
It should be the thing, and it's also very heavy. Like, okay, if you eat, you know, if you eat a big plate of gnocchi, you're taking a nap. Like it's worse than pasta. I don't know why. But it's
right,
very
and
heavy.
Pasta's intense. Yeah. But so the pasta, a gnocchi is what, the size of like your thumb, like that first joint of your thumb, or bigger?
Bigger typically. There's actually, like, it's weird because they do, there are like little, there's like a little, there's little ones and then there's, yep, ones that are bigger. So there's not quite an answer to that, like that's standard. Right. But I say most of the time you're looking at like,
sort of a quarter.
I would say like more like a half dollar. I'm sort of doing the like okay sign with my hand and it feels like roughly the circle part.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. But then it could be any sauce, just a nice sauce, right? Just a red sauce, a white, yeah, sauce, just red any sauce, a works, butter sauce. Yeah. 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 Do, yeah, whatever you got to do. Just try not to eat more than like 18 of them, I imagine.
Yes.
If you ate 18 gnocchi, there would be a nap, I, yes, think, yeah, is what you're saying.
Yes. You would feel pretty bad, I think, if you ate a big plate of gnocchi.
Yeah.
I've been there. It's not.
The weird thing about pasta dinners sometimes is sides, mm-hmm, because it takes up so much of the plate.
Yes.
That you're like, well, clearly we're using other dishes for salad.
Yeah.
Or if there's going to be a vegetable. Or is, yes, it always like sort of a traditionally a one pot meal?
I think people do serve it with it, but I think the idea of, you know, having different things on a plate is something that's like, it's not like it's not done in Italy, but it's a little more American than Italian. A lot of times, I mean, that's the idea of like primi piatti, secondi piatti is like, you know, there's going to be a plate with one thing and you'll do that. Yep. And then there'll be a plate with another thing. We don't need to use one. We don't need to have pasta with this thing on the side and then try to squeeze a vegetable onto the same plate.
You're like, right. I own other plates. Why would you? It'll be fine. They can even match if you need them. Yeah. It'll be all right.
Yeah.
And okay.
But it does lead to sort of like, I mean, part of my Italian food experience has been like, you know, you would have like a pasta meal and then it's like, and then a whole other thing. And you're like, I didn't plan for, or like visually now it's like, oh, that's gone. Like it's a lot of food. It can be my, I remember my grandmother.
It feels like several dinners.
Yes. She would make a whole pasta meal and then we'd be like full from a pasta meal as you would be.
Yeah.
And then she would be like, okay, time to bring out like this veal that I made. And you're like, where are we going to put this veal? We used to do pasta and meatballs before Thanksgiving dinner, like as a little warm up. Pasta and like little, my grandma used to roll little meatballs, little tiny ones, and we would eat a whole bowl of that. And I remember we would have friends over, you know, and they'd be like, "What is this? Like, what are you?" Because they thought, I guess they're Italian. They have pasta and meatballs for dinner. On Thanksgiving.
Yeah, yeah. Instead of the whole Thanksgiving meal, too.
A turkey, mashed potatoes, sides, the whole thing.
She's like, well, you can't have a meal without just a little bit of pasta with some meat. What are you, nuts? And I will say that I've been to Italy a couple of times, but the one time I went with my husband and I, we saved up. We went for our honeymoon. Yeah. We spent a week in Venice. We spent a week in Florence. It was all very glamorous. But the week in Venice, we get there. And the first night, we go out to dinner. And we sit down. And we're looking at the menu. And we don't speak Italian. I've done a little Duolingo. It's not enough. And so I've got a little book. And, you know, we give it a shot. Everybody appreciates our effort. And then they go, it's fine. Just speak English. And so, but we appreciate your effort. But the thing is, we order the prefix. We just get a meal. Mm-hmm. And it's fucking Fantasia. It's just like one thing after another just keeps coming with tiny little shots of booze with every thing. I don't drink. My husband will have half a drink and he's like, I'm starting to feel it. I don't like it. And I'm like, power through it, buddy. That's where the good stuff lies. And he's like, shut up. And so, so we literally, that was the only night that we ordered like a traditional prefix kind of, because every other night we're like, no, no, we have to find a place that will allow us to just have one food
right.
or something.
Yeah.
Otherwise it's just going to be a waste or it's, yeah.
Yeah. Some normal, you just wanted some normal amount of food.
Right, right, right. Or if it was going to be nine different kinds of food, make it tiny.
Yeah.
Right? We went, we went on our second honeymoon. That took 11 years to save up for, south of, middle of France. So we're in Lyon, and then we go to where the cave paintings are, and there's some sort of Michelin star restaurant that you can go to that has like essentially French omakase, where okay. they you don't get to pick. They just keep bringing you things. And so we sat there and they just kept bringing us, but they were tiny bites, but there was 100 of them, you know? And you're like, oh, all right. We were full 13 plate. Oh, okay. No. Yeah. Just two more. Oh, okay.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah. It's, and then they make fun of you because you're an American and you ate it all. And
you were supposed to pass on half of those and you didn't know.
I don't know. Yeah. I was like, I didn't get a memo as to how I was supposed to respond.
Yeah. We would have, I mean, our family dinners would be like, like waves of things, not in French size in full attention. And then the other thing that would be crazy about it is that you would be paired with like bullying. If you didn't
emotional.
Yes. Like if you didn't, if it's like, you know what? I'm full. I don't want, come on. Like, it's like, you know, there would be this, and it's like, why? Who? Yes.
Yeah.
It took me years to get the inner strength to tell my grandfather, no, like,
yeah,
I'm not going to be bullied into eating more meatballs by you.
My grandmother would feed me and then call me fat. And I was like, you did this.
Yeah.
I don't think you understand where this is a symbiotic relationship of you jamming Armenian food down my face and then going, why are you eating so much? What's happening?
Yeah.
You're never going to get a man. And you're like, I don't need one. I have thumbs. Leave me alone. And so
this is just confirming for me. I've always thought of Armenians as like the Middle East's like Italians, like just like, you know what I mean?
Right.
Like the Italians of that region. And because when I've met them, I felt like there's a little similarity between Armenians and Italians that I can't put my finger on, but I'm like, there's something similar.
It feels it's so interesting. The different cultures, the more I meet people of different cultures, you're just like, oh, we're all the same. Like, have you ever heard somebody, like, I think the last time, and I've heard absolutely every single race and culture say, well, that's just Filipino time. That's just Armenian time.
Right, yeah.
And you're just like, no, that's just rudeness. You don't care about other, you're saying that they're humans and that they can be jackasses.
Yeah.
Don't be late. What are you, nuts? Anyway, so, but it's so funny because it's every culture.
Yeah.
I was watching, I'm actually working on a bit about it, but I will not do it. Rangers, you are saved. But it's called Flavorful Origins. And it is, speaking of pasta, it is set in China and it's a docuseries on Netflix.
Okay.
And there's three seasons and each episode is 10 to 13 minutes. And essentially we go into rural China where there's still billions of people. But we go into rural China and we learn what the locals are eating. And they're making noodles out of everything. They're making noodles out of potatoes. They're making noodles out of rice. They're making noodles, out of flour. And it's beautifully shot. It's gorgeous. But it's a glimpse into almost, it's exactly what you were talking about, where you're just like, it's the same people. And
yeah.
At some point, they're eating something that locally that you're just like, and the bit is about how every four or five episodes, I'll be like, why are you eating that? Your ancestors were forced to eat that because there was nothing, literally nothing else to do.
Yeah.
And they're rolling over in their graves right now.
Yeah.
And they're like, why don't you eat the rest of the goat, you idiot? We had to eat that. That's the bile from the stomach of a, you're out of your goddamn mind. Anyway, so.
I like that. That's true. Cause I think in every form of cooking, there is that thing where, like, I mean, when I was in Italy, one of the things that was served to us was like tripa, which is like tripe, which is like
tripe.
Intestines.
It has the consistency of a zipper. It literally, when I've had Mexican tripe, it has like a cartilagey, like if it hasn't been cooked long enough, you're just like, stop it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
One time I had a grasshopper taco, and I thought, this doesn't need to happen.
Nope. And we were, was it last year? Yeah. It would have been a year and a half ago now, probably, but I was in Cambodia. And the side of the road had grasshoppers, they had snake, and they had beetles. And I was like, I'm eating none of that. I don't need it. I got nothing to prove.
Yeah.
We're going to lunch.
Yeah.
So I'm good. I don't care if you put barbecue sauce on it.
You were smarter than me. I had this thing of like, I was like, well, it's like, I was at a Mexican place and I was like, they must be doing something to it where I'm going to be like, wow, this tastes better than I thought bugs would taste. And then when I had it, I was like, this is exactly what I would have thought if you burned a bunch of bugs and threw salt on it. This is what it would be.
What this is poor people where rich people have said to them, you get nothing. And they've said, oh, and then the bit is literally just me saying how somebody's grandmother had to take this pen and turn it into something delicious. and that's what all that is, you know? It's essentially somebody's grandmother saying, we get nothing? And okay, so look around, see what we can do here.
Look around.
Here's some weeds that they've left us, and there's some bugs that they've left us. Let's see what we can do. And it's fine. I mean, sustainability-wise, it's supposed to be really good for you. Very soil and green kind of situation, but... I'm fine right now. We don't need to do it. So what is your favorite thing to put on pasta? Like, cause you're making these Sunday meals.
Yeah. So
were the kids just want spaghetti and meatballs or what happened?
One of the kids, it's my brother's kid. I guess I can talk trash in this podcast. She probably won't listen. She's five.
Five. Are you kidding me? There's not a bigger asshole in the world than a 5-year old.
She would I would spend like all Sunday, like, you know, making this sauce and this fresh pasta, whatever.
Oh.
And she would go, I want sauce on it. And it's like, it has sauce on it. What she meant was she wants to take a jar of store-bought Prego sauce and dump it on the pasta. And like, I know she's five and it's like,
yeah, she's five. Thing,
but like, I've never been more rageful. But it's like, I couldn't let it out because you can't scream at a 5-year old for just wanting to eat.
It turns out you're the adult in that situation. I'm so sorry. My apologies.
I'm so rarely, but it's just, yeah, I was like, ugh, I really disagree with what you're doing right now.
I stopped describing my mac and cheese as mac and cheese to children because they want pasta and cheese. Because if you say, hey, we're having mac and cheese, the children expect it to be orange.
Mm-hmm.
And if it is not orange,
right,
I don't like it.
Yes.
But if it's pasta and cheese, they have no idea what the hell they're, what is that?
That's very smart.
Yeah. I have so many nieces and nephews. I have learned to trick the fuck out of them. I'm just like, yeah, what don't you like? All right. Because I don't know if you know this, but Aunt Jackie doesn't make pancakes right. How can I not make pancakes? Are they round? They're like, Mom makes them with ears. And I'm like, does she? Anyway, what we're having then are round vehicles for butter and maple syrup. That's what we're not having pancakes. We're having round maple syrup vehicles. And
you have to trick them a little bit. It's but no, normally I like to put favorites. I would say if I can get a really good flavorful meat sauce with a noodle, that's close to the top.
That's an ideal.
Probably my favorite thing to do, but it's a lot of work, is if a lasagna comes out perfectly. it feels like a triumph because there's so many things that can go wrong with a lasagna that if you...
How do you make lasagna?
I like how you were trying to narrow it down to the questions you had, but you were like, I think it's all the questions. What?
I think, and
lasagna,
and
I think I know what
the reason I don't make lasagna is because it's fiddly.
It's yes.
But I want to hear how it's fiddly from your point of view, because I wonder if it's the thing that I have to do to make it stay stacked, to make it look like a lasagna once you cut into it.
Yeah. That's actually sort of a good way to think about it is when you cut into it, what happens? And that's the main thing. But within that question, there's like, you know, there's different things that can go wrong. If the noodles aren't right, if the noodles are like, you know, overly hard, then when you go to put your fork into the lasagna, it's going to squish down like you got layers of pasta blankets that are squirting out the fucking filling, which is bad.
Right. Too hard. Yeah. It's gonna send your salami meat flying in the air kind
yes.
of thing. All right.
I mean, I think personally, too soft is a little hard to do for me, but because I think if it's soft, that's good with lasagna, but you can kind of, if it's too mushy and there's not enough noodle to hold it into layers, that's bad. But I mean, the other thing that can happen is if your filling is wrong, that it can release liquid into the pan, and then it can become soupy,
Or
can bubble up and burn, or it can. There's just so many things that can go wrong. I typically avoid putting like vegetables unless they've been really cooked down into a lasagna. But
eggplant. Like if you wanted to do an eggplant, you would have to cook it a lot.
Oh yeah, you want to cook it so that it's no longer going to release liquid.
Okay.
If you got anything in there releasing liquid, you're sort of asking for trouble, especially when you already have sauce and you already have a sort of cheese filling.
You already have a tomato sauce and a cheese. Those are the two those should be the wettest things in there. Is that what I'm hearing?
Yeah. I guess
mushrooms.
Yeah.
You would have to cut those.
If I were using mushrooms, I would cut them up and cook them down completely and probably like almost drain them, dry them out before I put them in. But yeah, I usually do like a meat sauce. I sometimes use that same lamb ragu, but that, and I do, instead of a ricotta, there's two ways you can go. You can go ricotta or you can go bechamel. I typically go bechamel. I think it just tastes better, but I'll do like a lemon bechamel, lamb ragu, and then mozzarella cheese. So those are like the three layers. And in between each of those layers, you do a pasta layer.
Okay. And is there a bechamel test where women just don't talk about their boyfriends? That is a reference to the Bechdel test. Anyway,
that was good.
It was a deep cut, and I literally was sitting here waiting to say it, going, just let him finish talking about the actual food that he's talking about, Jackie. Don't be a dick. And so this is probably going to hurt your feelings, but I make something that's called idiot lasagna.
Okay.
And idiot lasagna is you take macaroni and you mix all the things that you would put in the layers.
Okay.
And then you put on top of it, lasagna noodles. So you are hiding.
Jackie, I got to go. I can't take this.
He storms out, you guys.
you're mixing the macaroni with what before you put the noodle on? With
the
sauce and cheese?
The red sauce and the meat and the vegetables. And it's essentially, and then you bake it with a layer just to hide the casserole essentially underneath it to make it look like a lasagna from above.
Wow. But then when you slice into it, you can see the fucking...
It's a mess. Yeah.
...catastrophe that you've created.
Right. It is
not
beautiful.
You're not hiding it for that long.
No. It's all an illusion. And because when I make real lasagna, and I haven't done it in a dozen years, is what I do is I make the layers and I put the food, like I put the cheese and the sauce and the meat or whatever it is in between the layers, and I build it. I build the lasagna.
Mm-hmm.
I then in the pan, and then I take the lasagna and I put it in the fridge overnight, covered, so that it kind of sets. And
before
then I
you
bake
cook
it.
Okay, before
I cook
bake it.
And then I bake it. And it tends to stay together better if I do that.
Yeah.
And it certainly is not as embarrassing as idiot lasagna.
Yeah, and what are you trying to solve with the idiocy? Is it?
Someone wants lasagna. I don't want to make it. So they're just going to have pasta and sauce where it kind of looks like lasagna when they first look at it.
But you could do that. Couldn't you just do layers of, like, what? Why are you not just doing the layers of lasagna? If you already have the other ingredients, I don't get how this is a shortcut.
Like, it's a short, well, because then I don't have to build it and put it in the fridge overnight.
Oh, okay. I get you.
I could just sort of put it together and bake it and then.
Got you.
And then eat it. Where do you stand, Brian Parisi, on pesto?
I like
pesto. Do you make your own? Do you make your own?
I have used.
It's easy to make.
I have used the little jars occasionally if I'm like sort of, I don't know, in a rush mode. But if I'm, it's easy to make. So I'll make it. I will say it is one that I feel like it's not my best one. I just, I only do it in the summer. I try to do it in the summer. It just feels like a summer thing because of the basil, whatever. But I find that it's sort of tricky to get the right amount of garlic. I find that because you're using fresh garlic, which is can be so overpowering if you miss it. So I've definitely done that. I used to do, so I for the longest time I did this comedy show until the pandemic. I used to do this comedy show in Brooklyn where I cook pasta for the entire audience.
What?
So I would
How
make,
many people?
Like 40, 40, 50.
Oh, Jesus.
Yeah.
Okay. That's a lot of pasta.
So I have these like steam trays in my apartment and the venue is down the street and I would like cook all the pasta here and like put it in steam trays and then wheel it down the street to the venue. And then I would set up steam trays and we did like, you know, the half hour before the show, people would come and do like a buffet style thing. It was called the pasta show.
Awesome.
And we would do that. And so we'd, you know, serve people the pasta and then do the show. But one time I did a pesto sauce that had, instead of pine nuts, I used pistachios.
Oh.
And I was just doing a little twist on pesto. And I'm like, man, yeah. I'm so fucking clever doing a little pistachio instead of pine nuts. One of the comics, starts swelling up because he was allergic to pistachios not allergic to pine. So he's thinking, oh, I know I'm fine with pesto because pine nuts. And one of the comics who was on the show started, having like an allergic reaction to it. And I remember thinking
who was the jackass comic who said, can I have his time? So we're splitting that 10 minutes up. What are we doing? And wow, that's unfortunate though.
Yes.
So how did it taste though with pistachios?
Oh, it was honestly really good. I think it left a bad taste in my mouth because I almost killed a guy, but it was other than that, great.
And I will say that because we grow basil. In the yard. And so Andy will make pesto and then freeze it in ice cube trays. And then.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then we'll forget that we have it. And then a year later, he'll make it again. And you're like, what just happened? Too much.
Do you notice
pesto
any? Because I've never tried that. Do you notice any difference when it's like from the ice cube tray to the thing? Or is it like fresh pesto?
It's. You know, it's better than jarred. So I don't know if it's better. When he makes it initially, it's always the best.
Yeah.
When he freezes it, it's still better than the jarred, but I don't know that it's as good as when it not never frozen.
Better than jarred is great though. I mean, if you got better than jarred.
Because jarred is pretty good.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because jarred is quite delicious. Because I like a pesto. I don't mind a pesto.
Yeah.
It's we are pushing an hour, my friend, but I wonder, is there anything that I'm not knowing about pesto that we've not touched on? About pasta.
About pesto or pasta? Man, I could give any parting words on pasta.
Dig deep.
Salt your water, people.
That's it.
You taste it. If you don't know what the right level is, you taste it, and it should be like the ocean. That's you take a little spoon and you taste it.
Oh,
yeah, that's an easy way.
That's plenty. That's a lot of salt.
Also, it is. But the pasta only absorbs a certain amount of it. The other thing I would say is you know, be aware of the time. I feel like people, those are the two biggest mistakes, are like that, and don't, and take it out before, you know, it's ready, because it's going to keep cooking. It's just like meat. You know, it's, if you take it out when it's like, oh yeah, this is soft enough, it's going to be too soft by the time you get there.
And okay.
Especially if you're mixing it with a hot sauce, that's mm-hmm. another couple of minutes that it's basically cooking.
Okay. Yeah. That so, makes sense.
You know, this is like probably easily Googleable wisdom that I'm putting out there, but it's fundamental.
It's fundamental. And I would say, are there any YouTube or Instagram accounts that you're loving?
Oh,
is there anything that you've ended up, like, I had someone do a Dork Forest about charcuterie boards.
Yeah.
And she turned me on. She was like, I am not as good as this person on Instagram.
Yeah.
And I have been following that person on Instagram, and they make a hell of a board.
Okay.
It's called Ain't Too Proud to Peg?
I like
something like that.
Ain't Too Proud to Peg. That sounds like a different account.
Yeah, that does sound porny. Sorry about that, folks.
I have a plug. Okay, this is like, I'm being an old man right now, but instead of plugging an Instagram account, I have this cookbook from a woman who's dead.
Oh, perfect. I love that. I love a book.
This is Marcella
Meredith?
Marcella no, Hazan. Oh, it might be backward because of the
Marcella Hazan.
Yeah, Marcella Hazan, Hazan. And it's The Essentials of Classic Italian Cooking. It's like a mix of like a cookbook and like sort of an advice book. And it has a lot of stuff about pasta, and it's really good. You know, she's dead, so I'm not getting anything from this.
You guys want to give Brian some money, feel free to find his album. It's called Last Wishes, 800-pound gorilla. And it's Parisi comedy. Yes.
Yeah.
but this cookbook is just going to give you information.
Yes.
Yes.
And it's a really good one. And then I'm not really aware of anybody. I can't think of anybody that comes to mind that I'm like, but every time I've wanted to make a fresh pasta thing, YouTube videos are like pretty great.
And whatever you Google, just try a couple of different ones. If you're not feeling it.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
I do like the pasta roller I have. It's like an Imperia brand. They're really cheap.
Okay.
And I recommend those over the KitchenAid things, which sort of like stretch the pasta instead of rolling it. It's a kind of a different thing.
And I recommend you watch like 10 minutes of this Flavorful Origins thing on Netflix,
because you are
going to see some pasta working going down in rural China that'll blow your mind. And you're like, I've never, the theory that I've come up with is that the Chinese government has shot this to try to encourage tourism between provinces because each season is a different province of China. And there's only like 6 or 10 episodes, and they're all 10 or 15 minutes long.
Yeah.
And they're so beautifully shot. The food is beautifully shot. The landscape is beautifully shot. Even like weird goat bile soup, you're like, no, it's good looking.
I think
I'm never eating that.
That makes total sense as a theory. And I sort of almost hope it's not true, because if it's not, then you have like the most obscure conspiracy theory. That there was. Like, you want to know what this show's about? It's about tourism between provinces within China.
Jackie Cation recommends we all invest in tinfoil futures. Get in on the Reynolds wrap. Brian Parisi, thank you so much for doing this show.
This was fascinating and
delicious sounding. Rangers, you know the rules out there. Be good to each other. Take care of each other.
My hat. They're dancing around my hat, my hat, my hat, my hat. Well, what do you think of that? If it looks like a Mexican hat dance and it sounds like a Mexican hat dance, it's most likely a Mexican hat dance. So take off your hat and let's dance.
Yay! Oh, my God. Why don't we just call that as the end of the show?